suburban Eastern Australia, an environment that has, over time, evolved some extraordinarily unique groups of Homo sapiens. But today, we observe a small tribe akin to a group of meerkats that gather together atop a small mound to watch, question, and discuss the current events of their city, their country, and their world at large. Let's listen keenly and observe this group, fondly known as the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove.
We're back, episode 422, three meerkats present and accounted for on this occasion. I'm Trevor. With me is Scott the Velvet Glove. Scott, how are you?
Good, thanks, Trevor. G'day, Trevor. G'day, Joe. G'day, listeners. I hope everyone's well.
Hope they are as well. And Joe, the tech guy, is with us with no fake background. We get to see his luxurious curtains and grey wall.
Evening, all.
All right. Speak up a bit more, Joe. That was very low, but anyway.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's better. In the chat room, Matthew Chalk is already there saying good evening. Good on you, Matthew. He's on Facebook. You can be on Facebook or YouTube, and you'll be able to see all the comments and make comments, and they'll appear in the chat. Make your comments. We'll try and get to them if we can. We'll talk about news and politics and sex and religion. And what have we got in particular on the agenda today is going to be about a bit on the religious discrimination bill, which is coming back yet again. It's like a zombie. You know, you think it's killed off and just keeps coming back.
I cannot believe that they are still resurrecting that fucking thing. You know, it's a joke.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is from the Labor government too. Like, why the fuck would they try and resurrect it?
They just don't get it. We'll talk about that. We'll be talking about that. Masculinity is under attack. We'll talk about that. Don Farrell, one of our, well, I think he's like the foreign minister's deputy or something like that, questioned whether the United States is Australia's strongest ally, and there was an uproar over that. Dutton says don't trust the science. A bit about crime rates, a bit about subs. We've got to get to Israel and Gaza just to go through the latest round of atrocities going on over there. Bit about Ukraine, Trump the athlete, and various other bits which we probably won't even get to, but we'll see how we go. So first up, grateful. What are you grateful for? I'm grateful for, well, one of the problems, dear listener, of living in one of the leafy upper middle class suburbs is local petrol stations jack up the fuel price here about 30 cents more than everywhere else. And so we had to drive down the coast on a near empty tank, but I was able to do my calculations and jump onto, now what was the app called? It's called, there's a bunch of them different around, ServoTrack app, which basically describes very easily what the price of fuel is at various service stations along the way. Saved myself 30 cents a litre. I was grateful for the ServoTrack app. Have you guys ever used that one?
No. Because I hardly ever drive.
Yeah, you wouldn't, yeah.
You know, I live in a city that's so flat it could have forgotten the internal combustion engine.
Mm.
So, you know, I cycle or walk everywhere.
Joe, do you scout around for the lowest price?
Not very often, but sometimes I use the website.
Mm. Anyway, that's what I was grateful for. You guys grateful for anything, Scott?
Mm.
You're grateful actually for Parkrun.
Yeah, I am.
Yes.
I am very grateful for Parkrun. It's one of those things I started a few years ago when I moved up here. I didn't know anybody, and I was very grateful that one of the blokes and that stuff said to me, there's a few of us that have breakfast after this if you're interested. And I turned up there. I was the youngest person in the group, and it's really good.
Mm. And have a good chat with people afterwards, and it's a healthy social activity as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And it has expanded. I am now running on Tuesday night, and I also then run myself on Monday and Wednesday mornings. Yeah.
Very good. Mm. Joe, grateful for anything?
I went to a conference at the weekend.
Oh.
It was a security conference.
Oh, okay, work-related.
So the first one I've been to. But, yeah, grateful to get there, catch up with some former colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
And get to learn a bit about an industry I'm trying to move into at the moment.
Very good. Yes, looking at your background there, Matthew describes it as the great wall of the grey wall of Joe.
It's actually white. It's just the lighting.
Yes.
Right. Matthew Chalk lives in a regional town in central Queensland.
Yep.
So whereabouts in central Queensland do you live, Matthew?
Yeah, anywhere near Mackay, a chance. Yeah. This is the thing. The petrol in, say, that it's constantly hovering around $2 for the for the 95 fuel. See, here it's always more expensive. Like, we pay more in the gap than you would in regional Queensland. Just crazy how it works. Anyway.
We've got to have some compensation for living up here.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Now, dear listener, there are chapters and timestamps. If you don't want to listen to our goings on, then you can scoot through to the more substantial topics and, yeah, look at the timestamps, look at the chapters in your app if you want to do that. Because before getting into the main meaty topic of the religious discrimination bill, just wanted to shout out to Noel. He's the first new patron for 2024. In fact, he's the first new patron since the 24th of August, 2023. So good on you, Noel, for going on and signing up and becoming a patron. Look at your show notes, dear listener. There's a link there with the options. It's easy to do. Also, a big thanks to DB Slatya, who provided a one-off donation again, which he does sort of regularly at different times. Thank you for that. And Chris Tatum, who donates via PayPal. But Noel, you've joined an illustrious list of patrons. Now, we don't often call out the patrons' names, and we should do it more often, but these are unsung heroes who give without requiring recognition, clearly, because you don't get much on this podcast. So starting from the most recent to the oldest patrons, big thank yous to Noel Hamilton Page, Damien Van Snydel, Danny Borland, Obrad Puskarica, Anti-US Sentiment, Mark Lavelle, Tom Stubbings, Rico, Greg P., Shannon Legg, Matt Dwyer, Sue Cripp, James, Wayne, Virgil, Craig Ball, Shane Ingram, Yam Yam Blue, Zambuck, Lloyd Berg, David Copley, John in Dire Straits, Camille, Tom Doolan, Paul Waper from Canberra, Alexander, Allen, Matthew, Craig S., Glenn Bell, my brother, Professor Dr. Dentist, Murray Waper, brother of Paul Waper. Murray says that our show notes are the best in the business. That is the benefit you get from being a patron, dear listener. You get the PDF of the show notes. Andy Dowling, Peter Gillespie, Gavin S., Daniel Curtin, Liam McMahon, DomDom282, Matic Man, Kane Birch, Jimmy Spud, Tony Wall, Steve Shinners, Allison Ayame Wayno, Craig Gladsby, and Janelle Louise as our current oldest patron. So, yes, we don't often enough say thank you. So they're quite selfless. And I was looking about, I don't know, I just wanted to look and Google something about people who do good things without needing recognition, and came across this thing from Expert Editor, which describes the patrons of this podcast. So some people go through life in a constant pursuit of recognition and applause, while others quietly make a difference in the world without seeking validation or acknowledgement. You might wonder what drives these silent heroes to continuously do good for others without expecting anything in return, or how they manage to remain humble amidst their selfless acts. There's a good description of our patrons there. So this writer has distilled their characteristics into six key traits. One is empathy. Their empathetic nature compels them to act, to reach out to comfort and help, not because they want praise or acknowledgement, but because they genuinely feel the need to lessen another's burden. Humility. These individuals understand they're part of a larger community and that their actions are a contribution to the collective good rather than a means to boost their personal status. Selflessness. They prioritize the needs and well-being of others, even when it's inconvenient. Altruism. Research indicates that individuals who engage in altruistic behaviors experience numerous physical and psychological benefits, including enhanced happiness, health, well-being, and longevity. There you go, dear listener. That's a potential benefit heading your way if you become a patron. Integrity. They understand that true virtue lies in doing good when no one is watching. And resilience. A resilient person doesn't help others because it's easy. They do it because they believe in the cause, regardless of the challenges they may face. So there we are, dear listener. That's our patrons. Resilience mixed with a good dose of empathy, humility, selflessness, altruism, and integrity.
I'm not going to pay you more money.
Well, it was worth a shot. I've got to do something. They're the first patron since August 2023. That's a long drought. Anyway.
It is.
Yeah, anyway. Religion. So the religious discrimination bill, there's a link in the show note. There was a good article in the Rationale magazine entitled Why I'm Speaking Out About Discrimination in Christian Schools. And in one paragraph, he pretty much summarised the whole situation very well, which was, in faith-based schools, we have institutionalised discrimination enabled through state-based exemptions to anti-discrimination laws and funded by the taxpayer while the broader community remains unaware. And that's the case. That is what we've got, is institutionalised discrimination funded by taxpayers and most of the public is unaware of what's going on. So, this religious discrimination bill, the history of it, dear listener, was that with marriage equality, the rabid Christian right-wingers in the Liberal Party were incredibly unhappy and that in order to placate them, Turnbull offered some sort of the Ruddock inquiry into religious discrimination. And of course, Ruddock came out with an appalling report recommending that even more exemptions be granted for religious believers, allowing them to discriminate not just on the basis of faith, the different faith of people, but on the basis of characteristics such as whether they're gay or, you know, lesbian or whatever. So, and that created a huge uproar. Scott Morrison tried to get it through and it ultimately failed because of trans kids, because people were saying, well, this is going to allow schools to discriminate against trans kids. And that was the point that it all fell over on, which, incredible. We're funding these private schools, for example, and we're allowing them to say, well, you're a Christian school, therefore if somebody's not Christian, you can discriminate against them in hiring and enrolment. And people say, this Labor government currently thinks that's okay. They just don't want you to be able to discriminate against gay people, for example, lesbians, or and they just don't see that both of them are bad. It just amazes me. But, you know, we understand that in a community where everybody's working together in a cooperative way, allowing unfair discrimination isn't good for a healthy society. Check out Israel and Palestine, Exhibit A, in that regard. We really want laws where people are not allowed to just look at these characteristics and say, not part of our group. But they continue to just accept that that's quite acceptable behaviour by these private schools, for example. So I think, where are we up to? Apparently, Albanese was on a plane with Dutton. Are you aware of this, Scott?
Yeah, I was aware of that, and that Albanese said to him that if you don't give us bipartisanship on this whole thing, I'm going to walk away from it.
Mm.
Apparently, Dutton spat the dummy after that, and so I don't know where bipartisanship is now, whether or not it is dead.
Mm. So Albanese is saying, unless I get bipartisan support, I'm not going to try and run it.
Yeah.
Because he's already been smacked around the nose with the voice issue. Yeah. Mm. So, and I think the proposed legislation was still, for example, providing, yeah, you can discriminate against people because they're of a different faith, but that was drawing a line somewhere around gay and lesbian kids, whether it's in enrolment and then whether that extended to teachers, who knows, we haven't seen it, and certainly wouldn't have allowed it for transgender kids. So it was probably going to be the case that the religious groups are too scared of losing what they've already got. So we're in the situation where Labor's still quite happy to entertain good, hardworking teachers being basically banned from participating in teaching in 40% of employment opportunities for teachers in Australia, because perhaps they're not Christian.
Mm.
And Labor, who should be supporting working teachers should be aghast at that. But they don't give a shit. And they think it's perfect. Not only don't give a shit, they just actually think it's perfectly fine. So that's where we are with that. A couple of articles. What did Michael Bradley say here in Crikey? So he says at the bottom of this mess is an irreconcilable difference between the necessary implication of religious freedom being the freedom to discriminate against others when that's what one's faith dictates versus the right of everyone to live an equal existence free from discrimination on the basis of attributes they did not invent. He says the old legal compromise was an uncomfortable one. The churches were allowed to discriminate principally against LGBTQI people and women, but against other groups as well, on the basis of their faith. Their faith was not elevated to the status of a protected human right. And that, of course, is what Ruddock was trying to do, was elevate faith to a protected human right, thereby enabling faith groups to discriminate against all sorts of people. So it's a minefield. And
do you think he just doesn't understand that? Because my impression of Albanese is he's not the brightest bulb in the pack.
I don't think he's a deep thinker.
No.
Is he not also religious?
Yes, he is.
He's a Catholic. But yeah.
Well, he said the three mainstays in his life, the three most important things in his life were the South Sydney Rabbitohs, I think.
Sydney Rabbitohs, the Catholic Church and the Labor Party.
And the Labor Party and the church. So full on in that sense. So he is no friend of secularism in Australia, and this Labor government is no friend either. So, anyway, the article in Crikey, there was a comment section, and basically the comment section was just full of people saying, enough is enough, very sort of against the idea of religious groups getting further rights to further discriminate. So fairly comprehensive in there. And, one of the comments there was, all of which should be blindingly obvious to Albo. It is remarkable that so many people spend decades in politics but remain hopeless at it. So, yeah. So that was that. The Australian Christian Lobby, I'm on their mailing list. They wrote to me and said, given the lack of bipartisan support, this bill is unlikely to progress, so the status quo remains. We thank God, because status quo isn't as bad as what was being proposed. So, from the ACL point of view.
So they wanted the additional protection to discriminate against transgender kids, didn't they?
Yes, and I think that this bill might have wound back some of the LGBTQI sort of discrimination that was inherent in the current arrangement. So as far as the ACL is concerned, they'd rather probably stick with what they've got than muck around with stuff and potentially lose it. So, yeah.
I back during the marriage equality, I basically wrote to or emailed or whatever to Binary to tell them to go fuck themselves.
Who did you email?
Binary.
Who's Binary?
So they've renamed themselves. They were some anti-gay group. They're now some anti-trans group.
Right.
Saying that there's only men and women and they can't change, therefore binary. So I get spammed about three or four times a week with some, God-fearing mother of two or something about, all these horrible things that the gender non-conformers are doing to her, how she was banned for hate speech, but she's got it all back and she was vindicated in some VCAT or whichever one it is. So, but I've not seen anything about the discrimination bill in there.
So just looking at the comments, John says, actually it's tribute money, talking to his patronage. Matthew says, same people who return the shopping trolley. It's a true litmus test for society. There you go.
That actually tribute money was a hangover off the one before, which was about the submarines.
Okay, he learnt from the John learnt from the Chaser podcast that if we actually get the secondhand subs, they will be based in the US, making visits to Perth. Thus, the billions we pay to the US is tribute money. There we go. And also Matthew said, I include your Patreon payment in my tithing budget line.
Good on you, Matthew. Thank you very much, Matthew.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of sort of gender issues, here's a worrying thought. According to Alex Antic, one of our federal politicians in the Senate, masculinity is under attack. So in his Twitter, he said, masculinity is under attack, but despite the best efforts of the subversive cultural Marxists in our midst, it certainly lives on in places such as the Aussie barbershop. Watch as I mansplain to the Senate how the patriarchy is far from being smashed. To hear more from me and stay up to date, sign up to my email newsletter here at alexantic.com.au/join.
I thought that was a stage name. I didn't realise it was an actual person.
Is Alex Antic a member of the Liberal Party?
Or is he one? Is he One Nation, Alex Antic? Can you look it up for me?
No, he's not.
Is he national? He could. No. They're all the same, aren't they?
Yeah,
Have a listen to him. And while that's happening, someone will Google where he's actually from, this guy. But here he is in the Senate, mansplaining.
Masculinity is under attack, and the war on men being led by the cultural Marxists, the likes of which roam every school, every university, and every education department in the country. Strong male role models have become an endangered species. Fathers in sitcoms are depicted as immature, dumb, lazy, and incompetent. Husbands in television commercials can't be trusted to organise the insurance. The cultural elites cheering on the decline of men are trying to erase the very fabric of our culture. But men seeking refuge still have a few sanctuaries. And last week, I stepped into the safe space, which is the modern barber's shop. No other environment better sums up the frustration among young men than these places. Three barber's chairs, three 30-something men working hard, a pool table, a bar fridge full of beers, and a PlayStation 5 hanging on the wall. The conversation drifted between the stupidity of the COVID period, the concerns about central bank digital currencies, and how they just want to be left alone to work hard and spend time with their families. And at one point, one of the barbers even dared to point out an attractive young woman walking past. Now, that was probably a microaggression, but it just seemed like a bit of harmless behaviour to me. Dismiss this as a frolic if you want, but every angry gender studies professor who thinks that they're going to crush the patriarchy has got some news coming. The alpha male lives on, and there's not a damn thing you commies can do about it except cry harder.
What a dickhead. You know, does he honestly believe that Karl Marx would have been in favour of transgenderism?
Cultural Marxism has nothing to do with Karl Marx, but but just these guys have spent way too long watching Sky News and listening to podcasts with Jordan Peterson.
That's come straight out of Fox News. You know, it's I cannot believe that dickhead could actually hold his head up and say, "Yeah, I'm a senator for South Australia," if he actually says garbage like that.
That's what goes for debate in our parliament at the moment. This is the caliber of person getting in. I'm grateful for hair clippers that my wife does my hair, and I don't have to go into a barbershop if that's what's going on there. For God's
sake. I go to a barbershop and there's no problem up here. You know, that guy's obviously a dickhead.
What's a barbershop?
Yeah. As James said in the chat room, so he just got pre-selected to the top of the ticket there as well. So he was second, I think, and he moved to the top. Yeah.
That's what I was saying, that they reckon the radical Christian right is stealing the Liberal Party.
Yeah.
And it really wouldn't surprise me after hearing that diatribe of nonsense.
That's the best thing you've got to do. You're in a position in the Senate, and that's the best you can come up with. Oh, dear. So if you're looking for something to watch that would be better than that, there's a documentary on my favourite economist, Yiannis Varoufakis. It's called Eye of the Storm. So if you go to eyeofthestorm.info, you'll find details about it. 4 hours and 18 minutes. It costs $29.99. I haven't yet bought a copy and watched it. Waiting to see how many new patrons I get. And
you too want to contribute to Trevor's slide into socialism, then please do contribute so that he can buy Eye of the Storm.
Yeah, that's right. So this socialist can watch another socialist talk about socialism. Yeah. And you all have to contribute. Yeah, that's it.
Anyway, Eye of the Storm, Yanis, I'm sure it'll be good. I'll get to it eventually.
When you can't find it on a dodgy download site, it's called In the Eye of the Storm.
Ah, okay. All right. So Australia's Trade Minister, Don Farrell, has come under fire from the opposition for saying he's not sure the United States is Australia's most trusted ally and instead argued New Zealand is. So this guy, Senator Farrell, was filling in for Foreign Minister Penny Wong during question time and made the comments after being questioned by the opposition's Claire Chandler about why the Australian government had not acted in line with the US, which is yet to restore funding to the main aid agency in Gaza, UNRWA. Remember, dear listener, UNRWA was the Palestinian organisation that basically provides the aid to Palestinians in Gaza. And due to unrelated statements by the Israelis, the 12 of the tens of thousands of UNRWA employees, 12 of them were allegedly part of Hamas. Our government, Canada, US and others, decided to withhold funding for the poor Palestinians in Gaza, the most needy people on the planet. And this bitch, Claire Chandler, is saying, why has the Australian government restored the funding, which is out of line with our main ally, the US? How dare we restore that funding that we'd withdrawn when our main ally hasn't? I mean, that dickhead antic was just stupidly foolish. This is a mean streak to this Claire Chandler. Anyway, this happens in question time. And she says here, why is the Albanese Labor government acting in opposition to the United States, our most trusted international partner, who await the outcomes of the investigation into UNRWA and in the interim is pursuing alternate means of delivering more humanitarian assistance?
I know, they're parachuting food in there, which, you know.
A drop in the ocean, literally.
What is what they would actually need is they need the aid to resume.
And killing people Israel, with their parachutes.
Yes.
You know, and the fact that Israel is blocking that is just, it's bloody criminal what they're doing.
It's genocide is what it is. It's genocide. It's appalling. And for this woman to say, why have we resumed aid to the Palestinians when the US hasn't?
Because Finland has resumed aid.
God, because it's the right thing to do, and it was incredibly stupid to take it away in the first place. That's why. Scott, please. The Israelis claim 12 members are part of Hamas out of a staff of tens of thousands.
Yeah, that's true.
And when, you know, claims by the Israelis, I wouldn't care if they were right. I wouldn't care if they said 200, 300, 1,000 of them are Hamas. I wouldn't care. The innocent people in Gaza need help, and it's the only way to get it to them. But anyway, Senator Farrell, in responding.
They restored it now.
Yes.
They've restored the funding now, as has Finland. I think Canada has too.
Yes.
I think that the Yanks are the only ones that have still dropped, that have still blocked funding, haven't they? Or is the UK also blocked funding?
I'm not sure. But so Senator Farrell, instead of saying, you mean-hearted bitch, what are you talking about, said, I'm not so sure about what you're saying here, that the United States is our most trusted ally. I would have said New Zealand in the whole history of time. I would have said our closest international ally is New Zealand. But we're very close to the United States. I freely concede that. So then we get Shadow Affairs Minister Simon Birmingham quick to criticise the comments. Quote, it beggars belief that a cabinet minister in the foreign affairs and trade portfolio would be so eager to talk down Australia's partnership with the US. Senator Farrell's statement is something I would expect from the Greens rather than a senior government minister. And Liberal Senator James Patterson called the statement extraordinary and said Prime Minister Anthony Albanese should rein in his rogue colleague.
They're right, you know. I mean, New Zealand doesn't have a spy station on our shores.
Yes.
Nor does it have a marine base on our shores.
Yes.
And we're not buying nuclear submarines from them.
Yes.
Wouldn't that make them a better ally? They're not sponging off us.
Honestly, what a terrible episode in our Australian Parliament. Criticising the return of aid, measly as it is, to Gaza because the US hasn't restarted doing the same, and then getting all hysterical because somebody filling in for the foreign affairs minister says, yeah, it's a bit of a toss-up. I'd probably go for New Zealand as our best ally. What a sorry state of affairs. Oh, goodness me. Okay. Nothing else to say more about that?
Well, I was going to say it's only because they don't have real policies to argue about.
No.
Argue about these ones.
That's right. Yeah. Dutton. Remember we talked about Dutton and his criticism.
The CSIRO, wasn't
yes. it? Yes. So the CSIRO has been producing the annual GenCost report. And the GenCost report, he questioned the report's integrity and said it was discredited because it doesn't take into account some of the transmission costs, the costs around subsidies and the costs around subsidies for renewals. Of course, it does include transmission costs. Like, it's very specific. So it's complete bullshit to say it doesn't include the extra transmission costs associated with using renewable technology. So in that report, sorry, Joe.
The report questioned his integrity.
Did it?
No.
Yeah, should. We need a report on his integrity. Maybe that's what we're doing here on this podcast. So the most recent GenCost report estimates a theoretical small modular reactor, if it's built in 2030, it would cost between nearly $400 and $636 per megawatt hour to generate electricity, whereas wind and solar at around $91 or $130. So, you know, there's all this talk about how long it would take us to build a reactor and whether we have the capability of doing it. And there's sort of arguments about that. But they've never come out and said, oh, well, of course, once it is built, the cost of generating this electricity and the nuclear one is going to be much cheaper than renewables. Like, they haven't admitted the extra cost involved with nuclear power. It's crazily expensive compared to renewables. So did you guys watch – there's a guy on – I guess he's the opposition energy spokesman, and he was on The Insiders, and he was also on 7:30 – it was on 7:30 Report and talking about nuclear power.
Oh, I mean, that was when the host toured the new one, wasn't it?
Well, she tried to. You know, he actually – because it's such a BS argument, he actually did a half a good job of sort of the obfuscation and just rhetoric required to just keep talking and not get too bogged down in things. He's quite an evangelist for it. And apparently he didn't start off that way, but he's become that way. So
I actually hear that. And they said that he was chosen to chair that committee because he was so level-headed, and he has now become quite an evangelist for nuclear energy.
Yeah, I think
now God alone knows why.
Yeah, I think he spent a lot of time talking to advocates for nuclear energy and not enough of advocates for the contrary view, I think.
I read an article that was talking about basically there is a new generation of nuclear reactor that's being built at the moment in Europe and I think one other country, I can't remember. One of them is the Hinkley Point reconstruction. It's being built by EDF, which is the French electricity company, which is national and runs all the French power stations. And they're also upgrading one of the French ones, I can't remember. Basically saying how late they are. You know, they were supposed to be in action. They're three times over budget. They're at least 10 years late. And this is only with the current generation, the small modular reactors. Nobody's ever built one. Who knows when, if ever, they'll build one. This is all just bullshit.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. When you've got a country like Australia, I don't think there's any point us investing any money in nuclear energy because we've got plenty of wind, we've got plenty of sun. So all you've got to do is just find a way of firming it up, and they've started that up here in Queensland. You know, you've got two dams which are not yet under construction, but they will be under construction. And once they've constructed, water goes down, goes through turbines to generate electricity. During the day, once the sun's shining, the wind's blowing and that sort of stuff, you pump the water back up the top, you know. It makes perfect sense.
You know, you talked before about how this coalition has no policies, so they talk cultural issue. They have one policy, and it's this nuclear energy policy. Yeah, it's God the worst possible policy. Frightening. Frightening.
It is.
Right.
You know, because you can only just see that. You've got, you know, $382 to $636 per megawatt hour for the nuclear reactor compared to $91 to $130 an hour per megawatt hour for the renewables.
Yeah, but that's not important. What's important is the vested interests of the funding, the political campaigns of the politicians.
Mm. Yeah. So, anyway, that's that story. Where were we? Crime rates. Dear listener, on your behalf, I read the Courier Mail every day. I can tell you that for the last 2 years in particular, it's been running rampant with a law and order campaign about how much more crime there is in Queensland. And it's all the fault of Anastasia Palaszczuk. Youth. And now it's the fault of Stephen Miles and various sort of LNP politicians come on at different times talking tough about law and order. And so it's been a big issue in the Courier Mail. And there is a genuine perception in our community crime rates are up. And so I was delighted to see this article which said media reports suggest that crime rates are a significant issue. In the last few days, the ABS has published updated data on crime victimisation over the last 14 years. And guess what? The trend is downwards. So the different categories of break-in, theft from a motor vehicle, attempted break-in, malicious property damage, motor vehicle theft, other theft, and also physical assault, robbery, face-to-face threatened assault, sexual assault, non-face-to-face threatened assault, and graphs, etc. In all 11 categories other than sexual assault, the trend is downwards. Data on sexual assault is influenced by a rise in the willingness of victims to report cases, which has almost certainly increased in recent years. And examination of separate ABS data reveals that in the vast majority, around 90% of cases of violence against women, including sexual assault, the perpetrator is known to the victim. Nothing in ABS data supports suggestion that women face any increased threat from unknown sexual predators at large in the streets. So, I've been keen to get this statistic, and I reckon if you found a group of older people, boomers in Queensland, who have been on a steady diet of Courier Mail and Sky News, and said to them, what do you reckon? Are sort of crime rates increasing a lot in the last couple of years? Every single one of them would say yes. And now you can say, well, guess what? No, they're not, and put a report under their nose if you'd like to.
Remember where it was pulled out? An old copy of an Australian newspaper, I think it was the Courier Mail, from something like 100 years ago with a youth crime is unbearable. Something needs to be done about it.
Yeah.
So this is a good scaremongering tactic when you want to whip up feelings against the current government. And in fact, I just got an advert in the mail today for the new Liberal Queensland MP for my area. Candidate.
State candidate.
State, yes.
Yep.
And he was saying how, the number one on his thing was more police for the area, but also remove sentencing as a last choice for youth offenders.
Remove sentencing?
currently in the law, the sentencing guidelines say that jail is the last option.
Right, yeah, incarceration.
So, only once you've gone through everything else can you jail teenagers.
Mm.
And they're saying, we're going to remove this restriction because we want to jail more kids.
Just, they're devoid of policies, but when they choose to take up a policy, they just grab the worst possible one. The worst possible one. So,
in this report, it says, just as no opposition party is justified in raising anxiety about crime, no government should claim bragging rights for the trends, because in part they have to do with demographics as the proportion of young males in our population diminishes. In part they have to do with declining rewards from crimes such as robbery. Stuff that was worth stealing 20 years ago is now practically worthless on the fence market. And in part because cars and phones have become harder to steal. So while
it's one of those things, like, you know, we always used to joke about losing our DVD player, someone would knock it off.
Mm.
You couldn't sell them anymore.
No. Yeah. It says here, while the rates of armed and unarmed robbery involving physical interactions have tumbled, cybercrime is on the rise. So that all makes sense. So, yeah, there we go. Been dying for that. I am willing to bet a lot of money that the Courier Mail will not be reporting that data. Or if they do, they won't be reporting it honestly and in a fair light. So, yeah, there we go. Submarines, budget problems. So in the US, the Department of Defense will order just one Virginia-class nuclear-powered attack submarine in the fiscal year of 2025, a drop from two per year. So the US order has gone from two down to one, and it reflects shipbuilding bottlenecks, the private shipyards that produce these submarines face mounting backlogs due to limited capacity and personnel shortages, and the growth of the American defense budget has been constrained by the Fiscal Responsibility Act, so they don't have the same money that they might have hoped they would have. And the Virginia class is amongst the casualties. So the US has promised to sell Australia three Virginia class submarines, 2032, 2035, and 2038, with the option of providing two more. But the two boats per year pace that they had hoped to be at would only meet their own private US demand for subs. To cater to AUKUS and provide us with subs, the US needs to construct 2.33 submarines per year. And the actual delivery rate in the last 5 years has been 1.2. So if they're not building enough subs for themselves, what are the chances?
Could they get to build enough for us as well?
If the demand goes down, price goes down.
Yes.
So we can swoop in and take the capacity, the additional capacity in the shipyards.
Yeah.
And pay secondhand prices for a brand new sub.
They don't have excess capacity, Joe. Where'd you get that from?
Yeah. Well, so they were supposed to be building two a year and they're only going to order one. Yeah, so that's
because they couldn't.
That's a whole additional submarine.
Not only didn't have the money for it, didn't have the capacity. So a matching sort of problem there.
God, Jesus. ALP, rank and file activist group, Labor Against War, has called on the Albanese government to immediately freeze all planned AUKUS payments earmarked to underwrite the US Navy industrial shipyards. So we just are giving money to the US and to the UK to build these ships that we're never going to get, and they're not going to refund this money to us. So when it comes to the UK, we've just agreed to give them $4.6 billion for the submarine nuclear reactor factory in the United Kingdom as part of a 10-year deal. And Richard Marles is proud of this. Like, normally you hand over money in return for things. It's like, you got a sub there? Great. Here's the money. Now give us the sub. Or you've got a really concrete structured contract that says, show us a certain amount of works and then we will pay you some money, and show us more works and then we'll pay you more money. But we are just handing over money with nothing to show for it. It's our Labor government.
Mm.
I'm sure the French would sell us some.
Sorry. Well, they will sell us some, but, you know, it's the French submarines were designed to be nuclear powered, but they had to retrofit diesels into them, you know, which didn't actually work all that well. They were predicting there'd be problems with it and all that sort of stuff.
Announcing the payment, Richard Marles was with his UK counterpart, Grant Shapps. And Mr. Shapps said AUKUS was fundamentally about securing freedom of navigation in an increasingly dangerous world in a region that includes an increasingly belligerent China.
Is that David Cameron in that photo?
It would have been, yeah, because David Cameron's part of the government now, part of the sort of foreign trade. Yeah,
he's
part of the
government. He must have been given a lordship or something like that to do that type of work.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, opposition leader Peter Dutton has lauded the submarine deal. Says it's great.
He's a dickhead.
Liam McMahon will be pleased to know that Green Senator David Shoebridge was less congratulatory, arguing AUKUS was, quote, bleeding Australian taxpayers dry. And he says, remarkably, we have an Australian government celebrating sending some $5 billion of Australian taxpayers' money to the United Kingdom to prop up their failing nuclear industry, on top of the $4.7 billion the Albanese's government has already committed to the United States to prop up theirs. We're just agreeing to hand over $10 billion. Hi, guys, take this money. Hope it helps you make subs. Horrendous policy making.
You say this like it's a bad thing.
What was that, Joe?
I said you say this like it's a bad thing.
Yeah, I just, it's extraordinary. Another reason to vote Greens, Scott.
I'm going to do that, but I'm going to do it under protest. So, you know.
It should start to get enjoyable when you have issues like this.
That's fine, but we just got to see what the rest of them come up with, because I am very concerned.
About?
Well, by some of the things the Greens have said. Mm. Now, you know, I know it's...
Back to the renters?
Sorry?
You were concerned about their policy with property, is that it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's one of those things. I know it's not all that PC to pull apart, what's his name, Max Chandler, whatever his surname is.
Mm.
It's, I just think to myself that he's got a very simplistic view of the world, and that he is actually blaming people, the wrong people, for the problems of renters. And I can agree with him on occasion about some of the things he says, but not everything he says. So
Did you guys see the video of the drone attack on the Palestinians in Gaza?
No, I've just heard about it. Right. I read it in your notes on Saturday.
Okay. Let me just find here. Why isn't it coming up? Oh, it is. Look, it's a bit long, so I don't think there's any audio with this. So this part will be cut out of the audio-only podcast. But for you who are watching, if you hadn't seen this before, it's quite shocking, I think. So have a look at this. I'll just mute her, because supposedly these four youngish-looking men were returning to their homes in, I think, northern Gaza, and walking along the street with no obvious weapons showing, and fairly just innocuous looking group walking along a pathway, and then just sit back and watch it. It's just appalling.
Jesus Christ.
Just like that. Just in a whiff. Just awful. They really are. There's one remaining. So one remaining one is left.
What did they do wrong?
One remaining one is left walking along there, can't have any getting away, so they've honed in on him as well.
So is this Israeli footage?
I think this has come from, I think it was leaked from Israeli footage.
Right.
Because I think they needed this drone for.
Bloody hell.
You know, clearly these people were not providing a threat against anybody at the time.
No.
And that's the sort of stuff that these Israelis are up to. So, I mean, this guy's reduced to just crawling from his injuries, and it's just they have lost all.
They've lost any moral
humanity.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I used to have some sympathy with Israel, but now it's gone on too long.
Yep.
You know, I can understand. I could understand why they were keeping up the battle and all that sort of stuff, because all they wanted was their citizens back. Mm. However, you know, they are completely ignoring everything Anthony Blinken's been telling them and all that sort of stuff. So I think to myself that, you know, we should leave them alone now and just sort of think and just, you know, arm the Palestinians, you know, to turn the weapons on Israel.
Yeah. John tells me I better get it off YouTube quickly because the YouTube censor will be onto me. They probably will be. I'll try and, yeah, I'll just make it private to start with because they will censor that probably. But it's shocking to see.
Absolutely. It's
really
disgusting.
Now, let me just try this one as well. Hang on, see what this says.
Devastating burns in small children, one child alone.
Okay, so this one here is a British doctor who treated Palestinian victims in Gaza. So let's just go back to him and start at the beginning.
Devastating burns in small children, one child alone. Never forget, had burned so bad you could see her facial bones. We knew there was no chance of her surviving that, but there was no morphine to give her. So not only was she inevitably going to die, but she would die in agony. And what made it even worse, that there was nowhere for her to go and die. So she was just left on the floor of the emergency department to die.
So that's going on in hospitals, people being starved to death. Disease. It's a complete wipeout of that society. It's as bad as it gets. It is as bad as it gets. And what can we do? Nothing that I'm aware of.
Well, you know, I think Israel's got to pull out because they have squandered any moral argument that they had by just that footage should be enough for Blinken to say, you've got to back out and you've got to back out now or we're going to start arming the other side. You know, it's because four kids and that sort of stuff walking to their own home and then they were taken out by predator drones.
Yeah. Other things, Palestinian medical staff in Gaza have told the BBC they were blindfolded, detained, forced to strip, repeatedly beaten by Israeli troops after a raid at their hospital. So one of the doctors described being held for a week in detention where muzzled dogs were set upon him and his hand was broken by an Israeli soldier. His account matches that of other medics who wanted to remain anonymous. They told the BBC they were humiliated, beaten, doused with cold water, forced to kneel in uncomfortable positions for hours and were detained for days before being released. So that's other medical staff in Gaza. So, you know, that report about Israel saying that some members of UNRWA were Hamas. So UNRWA responds by saying that employees released into Gaza from Israeli detention reported having been pressured by Israeli authorities into falsely stating that the agency has Hamas links. So there's allegations that Israel was torturing Palestinians to say that they were from Hamas. Who knows where the truth lies with all these things? And while all that's happening, Caitlin Johnston pointed to a poll by Pew Research Center. So Pew Research are a respected polling group that we've quoted on numerous occasions in this podcast. And they asked Americans, the number of deaths in the current Israel-Hamas war has been about the same, meaning same for Israel versus Palestine, number of deaths, higher amongst Israelis, higher amongst Palestinians, and not sure. So asking Israel Americans, which side has had more deaths? Only 52% could correctly say that the death toll is higher amongst the Palestinians. 7% thought they were the same. 7% thought it was higher amongst Israelis, and 34% were not sure. So that's a pretty damning indictment. 34% said not sure which side has had the most.
I would be surprised that even 52% knew what was going on.
Yeah. Joe, can you just speak up a bit closer to the microphone because you're a bit low?
Okay.
Yep. Well, it's just appalling, isn't it? Half the country can't say with confidence, has no idea that, of course, Palestinians have suffered more deaths than Israel. How do you get – what's the point of a democracy when people are so ill-informed? Yeah. How can they vote on issues and what is the point of it if people are so propagandized that they have no idea of what's going on? The whole idea of democracy is we all look around, see what's going on, make assessments about what's best and vote for the group we think that'll do it. And when half the people don't even know something as fundamental as that, what's the point?
I don't know that they're propagandized. I think they're just, they don't care, they don't pay attention.
It's the subtle propaganda, Joe. Like it's all those headlines that, you know, Israelis are killed, whereas the Palestinians die, you know, in strange ways when they're gathering to collect flour from an aid station. Mm. It's all that subtlety of the headlines is the propaganda, I think. So, and you're right, and then they just don't read it, most of them anyway. So what else we got here from Caitlin Johnson? Says, American movies and TV shows like to make fun of nations like North Korea for having state propaganda, but Americans are easily the most propagandized population on earth. The propaganda of the mainstream press is so effective because Americans don't know it's propaganda, so they consume it without distrust or skepticism. So, and that's all about the headlines we talked about before. What else have I got here? Yes, so Australia is going to reinstate the money for UNRWA, the $6 million funding. Here, you know, $6 million funding that we were quibbling about, and we have just agreed to $10 billion.
And the AUKUS agreement.
Yep. Mm. Penny Wong said, on that basis and after consideration by the National Security Committee this week, Australia is unpausing our contribution to UNRWA. There are two facts a responsible government can't ignore in relation to UNRWA. They do life-saving work, and the recent allegations were grave. So the decision I'm announcing today is the result of the Australian government working together with our partners to rebuild confidence, to establish ongoing diligence about the use of aid money generously given by the Australian people. What a load of just gobbledygook crap, beginning with the word unpausing our contribution. For God's sake. Of course, it's Hamas's fault because they set a trap for Israel. So Haaretz, it's like the third most popular newspaper in Israel, and it had a headline reading, Israel has fallen into Hamas trap, but there's a way out. Hamas's hope is to provoke Israel into killing enough civilians to defeat Israel politically, a classic terrorist strategy of provocation that Israel has fallen for. But beating Hamas requires unconventional thinking. So, yeah, according to the Israeli paper, Hamas set a trap that Israel is going to be careful not to fall into.
Well, how many more civilians do they have to kill before they've actually tripped that into that trap?
Indeed. And the whole talk,
they've already got 32,000 on their list.
And the whole talk now is of a seaport. So they're talking about constructing a port that will allow aid in and out rather than via roads. And Israel admits that Biden's Gaza seaport has been Netanyahu's idea all along.
Oh, and, garbage.
Well, it's part of Israel's plans to dismantle and replace UNRWA, as well as permanently cut off Gaza from Israel. So having this port would mean there'd be no crossing of the border between Gaza and Israel. They can all go via the port and just isolating.
How will he actually, sorry to cut you off, Trevor, but how the hell would Israel actually keep an eye on what was going into the occupied territories?
I don't know. Don't know how that would work.
One of those things, like at least if it's crossing over Israeli land and that sort of stuff, they can go in and search it before it turns up there.
Yeah. I guess because there were tunnels, weren't there? So
there were tunnels, but that's how they
– I guess
– I think they actually got the stuff over and then they unloaded it and then they put down the tunnels.
I would imagine they would find it easier to monitor what's coming in and out when it comes via ship. Like the Israelis will control the port. And yes.
Okay, gotcha.
And so they can see everything coming on and off the ships, and then they can just flood the border areas so there's no tunnels.
Mm.
So completely stopping any sort of illegal trade, I think, is what the plan would be. Yeah. So I think we mentioned that the Prime Minister was being referred to the International Criminal Court for investigation over his role in supporting Israel with, you know, things we've already discussed. But you might ask, well, would the US president be worried by the International Criminal Court? And the answer is no. The US threatens to arrest the judges in the International Criminal Court if they even dare to investigate American war crimes. So here is a clip. I'll try and find this one. This is an older one. I think in relation to not Gaza, but in relation to Ukraine or something like that, where they were talking about the US response if the International Criminal Court was to look at America. So this one up.
Will respond against the ICC and its personnel to the extent permitted by U.S. law. We will ban its judges and prosecutors from entering the United States. We will sanction their funds in the U.S. financial system, and we will prosecute them in the U.S. criminal system. We will do the same for any company or state that assists an ICC investigation of Americans.
There we go. That's all Albanese had to do. He wouldn't have a problem. That's their view. What did the Malaysians?
They said that the ICC wouldn't be allowed to investigate US war crimes. They've always said that.
Yes. So that was what that was in relation to. And that would be their response to anybody working in the ICC if they were to think about doing it or try to do it.
Which is strange because they were very fond of the ICC in 1945,
46. Yeah.
Yeah, but see, that was back when the Yanks actually had a moral compass. They've lost it.
Mm.
You know, it's one of those things I just think to myself that when you look back over the arc of American history, and I know I will be very much criticized for this, but I think John F. Kennedy was probably where it first started to fall apart. You know, prior to that, there were some missteps and that sort of stuff, but I think JFK really did cock it up for him.
Mm. Well, now we can rely on Malaysia for moral authority. Here we go. I think there's a Malaysian PM with German PM at one point. I think he finishes in German shortly.
Sehr unterstützt. You cannot find a solution by getting so one-sided in terms of looking only at one particular issue and erase 60 years of atrocities. The solution is not just releasing the hostages. What about the settlements? What about the behavior of the settlers now, continues daily? What about the dispossession, their land, their rights, their dignity, their men, their women, their children? Are these of no concern? Where have we thrown our humanity? Why this hypocrisy? Why this selective and ambivalent attitude towards one race and one another? Is it because they are colored or they are different religion? But I, of course, cannot accept the fact that when you discuss issues, we only confine to one particular incident and one victim, forgetting the thousands of victims from the Nakba of 1947-1948.
That seemed quite reasonable.
He was quite reasonable. He's just trying to actually get the Europeans to understand that it's more than just October 7, you know.
Mm.
And he's right. You know, those settlements are disgraceful, what they're actually doing there.
Anyway, Jared Kushner has the answer. he says that Gaza's waterfront property could be very valuable. So praised the valuable potential of Gaza's waterfront property and suggested Israel should remove civilians while it cleans up the strip. Now, you might think, who cares what Jared Kushner thinks? But Kushner was senior foreign policy advisor under Trump's first presidency.
Yeah, I know.
And was tasked with preparing a peace plan for the Middle East.
And is Trump's son-in-law and a Jew.
Yeah, yeah. Is he a Jew? Yes. Okay, I didn't know that. Yes. So, okay.
Yeah, that was Trump's claim he couldn't be anti-Semitic because he had a Jewish son-in-law.
There we go. There we go. So that's Kushner's solution. Quickly, we get rattling through these. Ukraine update. The Pope, you might remember, dear listener and fellow podcasters, I've been saying for a long time that Ukraine should have just surrendered the parts that they'd lost. And now it turns out I'm in agreement with Pope Francis. He said in an interview that Ukraine should have what he called the courage of the white flag and negotiate an end to the war with Russia. He's quoted as saying, but I think that the strongest one is the one who looks at the situation, thinks about the people, and has the courage of the white flag and negotiates, he said. The word negotiate is a courageous word. When you see that you are defeated, that things are not going well, you have to have the courage to negotiate.
Yeah, but do you honestly believe that Vladimir Putin would be happy with the Donetsk region, or would he just take that, go back home, lick his wounds and that sort of stuff, rebuild his tanks, and then go back in there and take the rest of the country later?
Might do, but you just can't keep throwing bodies at the
If Italy line. Took St. Mark's Square, do you think he'd be happy to negotiate?
If Italy took
St. Mark's Square? Isn't that the in front of the Papal Palace?
Who knows? He may well negotiate. I mean, the Pope originally had the whole of Italy and he's been reduced to the Vatican. So he negotiate, previous popes have raised the white flag enough to reduce what was the entire of Italy back to what is now just the small little Vatican state. So yes, they have surrendered.
In the past, land. But that's different popes, not the one that's suggesting.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. You want to keep fighting, keep throwing men at them, and it's the end of the generation of young people in the Ukraine. But, yeah.
Well, we're just going to have to see what happens. I suspect he is going to have to negotiate with that bastard, but that bastard has proven time and time and time again that he cannot be trusted.
Mm.
You know, he's a prick.
Right. John says, I'm clutching now, Trevor. What am I clutching at, John? I'm clutching.
The Pope also agrees with you. Well, yeah. As if you've ever cared what the Pope thinks.
Yeah, exactly. Well, stop the clock, right twice a day. So, yeah.
I think the Pope's wrong is probably right less than twice a day.
Yeah. Just for a bit of humour, you all know Donald Trump is a great athlete, don't you?
I had heard.
No.
Yeah. Oh, here you go. This is just to prove it.
On a lighter note, I'll share that President Trump, like many of us in the room, is a big-time sports fan. And I say that because it makes sense. President Trump is a great athlete. When he was growing up, he was excelled in sports. And I'm not sure if I should say this, but just a few weeks ago, President Trump put to shame two professional golfers. I ain't going to mention their names, but just know he shot a 70 on 18 holes. And I don't know about y'all, but I would pay good money to see Joe Biden versus Donald Trump on a golf course.
I don't think Joe Biden plays golf, does he?
Is there no end to the shit these guys believe and mouth off? As if Trump shoots a 70 and beats a couple of pro golfers.
When whichever Kim it was born, all the birds started singing his praises in Korean. It's just as believable.
Well, they said that. There was a story now that you mentioned it about Kim played golf once.
Yes.
And got
a hole in one.
No, not just one.
Oh, okay.
But like four holes in one and went round in some, 45 or something on a par 72, some ridiculous story, and we were all laughing about it. I'm going to have to find that story for next week. And now we've got America falling into the most crazy the North cult Korean
of personality.
Yes, more of the propaganda that we're talking about. So, right, well, that's enough for an episode. I better make this one a private one. We'll get rid of it so that it doesn't get me a strike for being naughty for showing those videos. Dear listener, well, guys in the chat, good on you. Thanks for watching. Dear listener, thanks for listening. We will be actually next week is Easter Monday. You guys busy or what are you doing?
I'm going to Sydney for the long weekend.
Yeah. Joe, are you around?
I'm around. Very around.
Just not sure what will be happening next week. Keep an eye on Facebook for any notices about times and things. Not sure how that'll pan out, but we'll see. All right. Talk to you then. Bye for now.
And it's a good night from me.
And it's a good night from him.
Good night.